The views and opinions of this program are those of its hosts and guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Fiona Nowling, here with my co-hostess, Una Nowling. Behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson. We have several guests in our studio this week to talk with us. First, we will speak with Dr. Marsh, who some of you may know already, as she has been providing hormone therapy services for some of the community. Next, we will speak with Michael, Louise, and Libby, a local family. Libby is a young transgender woman who transitioned in high school with her family's support, and they're here today to talk with us about that. Also with us today is a special visitor, Libby's fiancé, Eliza, herself a young trans woman visiting from Oregon. I'll finish up the show with the community calendar update, but first, Una will take a look at some of the LGBT news of the week.
Hello, I'm Una Nowling, and this is the transgender news of the week. A federal judge has ruled that the owners of a funeral home had a right to fire a transgender employee due to their alleged religious objection to the employee coming out. The plaintiff, Amy Stevens, had worked at the RG&GR funeral home with a flawless record for nearly 7 years when she announced that she was undergoing a gender transition. The owners fired her for presenting as a woman, claiming that their interpretation of the Bible was such that transgender women are Satan's very own handmaidens. U.S. District Judge Sean Cox found, despite significant legal precedent protecting transgender persons, that because Title VII of the Civil Rights Act does not specifically list gender as a protected class, transgender persons have no workplace protections and can be fired whenever a cisgender person has a religious objection, a message from extraterrestrial beings, or even a tummy ache. More bad news from the crazy quilt of bigotry, also known as Texas, where a U.S. District Court judge temporarily blocked the Obama administration's order that transgender students be protected in their use of proper bathrooms and changing rooms under Title IX. Finding that gender identity is not a protected class, the judge's ruling applies nationwide until it is either successfully appealed or until another district court judge finds differently. Both this ruling and the prior one regarding religious discrimination by employers have the potential to set transgender rights back significantly, and it is even more likely now that the protection of transgender persons under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act is likely to become a Supreme Court case within the next 2 years. This exemplifies why this year's election is one of the most important elections we have ever faced as a community, as the next president of the United States is likely to appoint two new Supreme Court justices within just their first term, as well as numerous federal court justices. Texas transgender persons face yet more institutionalized hatred from their government, as State Attorney General Ken Paxton has filed a lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act, also colloquially known as Obamacare, to allow physicians to refuse treatment, even emergency services, to transgender persons should they have a religious objection to treating us or just saving our lives. I mean, let that sink in for a golden moment here. Paxton, a known transphobe, is joined by the attorney generals of four other states, including our very own Kansas, all of which feel that forcing a physician to save the life of a transgender person is the greatest injustice ever. In worse news, the case has been assigned to the same district court judge who ruled against transgender students this week. Despite their Tarzan-like screams of anguish over judicial activism whenever it goes against their pet cause, conservatives are nonetheless thrilled that soon transgender people may have one less vital resource available to them. So now let's have some better news. Well, I guess it's a mix of good and bad, like winning free tickets to an Adam Sandler film. This week, the University of Vermont women's basketball team canceled a December game against the North Carolina Chapel Hill team due to North Carolina's anti-transgender HB2 law, which was passed earlier this year. Vermont Athletic Director Jeff Shulman stated that competing in a state with an anti-transgender law was, quote, contrary to our values as an athletic department and a university, unquote. Vermont had proposed moving the game to a different venue, but North Carolina rejected the offer, claiming that they weren't comfortable with the move. Sort of like how transgender persons aren't comfortable living in North Carolina in the first place, but I digress. Meanwhile, the man responsible for the anti-transgender law in North Carolina, Governor Pat McCrory, released a transphobic attack ad this week against his opponent in the governor's race, featuring a woman allegedly she was molested as a teenager, but not by a transgender person. The ad claims allowing transgender persons to use bathrooms and locker rooms congruent with their gender identity would lead to children being attacked, molested, and, for all we know, being sold to gypsies and forced to become street mimes or jazz musicians. This, of course, is something nobody wants. In the Tempest in a Teapot section of the news, a Northern California bakery is under fire for a cake featuring a transgender plastic Ken doll on top. No, I really cannot make this stuff up. The Freeport Bakery in Sacramento clad the Ken doll in a lovely pink dress made out of frosting with a sash, a tiara, and some jewelry. Some anti-transgender clowns claim the cake is an insidious plot to corrupt the minds of children into accepting the godless communism of transgender dolls, whereas some transgender activists claim that the cake is yet another example of a cisgender hegemony that seeks to demean and objectify transgender bodies. My personal view is that all parties involved should probably find something more important to worry about. For instance, in Pokemon Go this week, I hatched 5 2-kilometer eggs, and all of them were Rattatas. I mean, is there no justice at all?
Well, on the plus side, the station does actually have a Pokestop here. You can make up for it.
That's true. The Rio Olympics was rife with controversy, and a late bit of it revolved around the women's 800-meter winner, Caster Semenya. The South African runner took the gold medal, but also took harsh criticism from sixth-place finisher Lindsay Sharp from the UK, who claimed that Semenya, an intersex woman, had an unfair advantage due to her having a higher level of testosterone than normal, but still much less than the low end for a typical male. After scurrilous rumors flew that the silver and bronze medalists also had naturally elevated testosterone levels, rumors which have not to date been proven in any way, shape, or form, British runner Nigel Levine made a misogynistic tweet calling the top three finishers men. The controversy involves women with natural levels of testosterone that are higher than normal, who formerly had to undergo mandatory surgery or stay on hormone blockers to be able to compete in the Olympics. Last year, the rule was suspended for 2 years over concerns that it was a violation of the human rights of intersex persons, something lost on Semenya's critics, who also conveniently overlooked the fact that no other intersex competitor took a medal in any sport throughout the entire Olympic Games. Coming under the category of celebrity slap fight, washed-up actress Bette Midler tweeted a transphobic comment this week about Caitlyn Jenner, asking if she would detransition as a result of the cancellation of her, well, dreadful I Am Kate show. Her tweet, followed by a quasi-apology the next day, led to the publication of about 5,000 angry blog posts, 500,000 indignant tweets, and the sending of 3 disgruntled carrier pigeons. Finally, Media Matters reported this week that there has been conservative angst in the blogosphere and talk radio over the Iowa LGBT Rural Summit, which Washington Free Beacon claimed was an Obama administration plan to teach, quote, lesbian and transgender hillbillies how to get subsidies from the government, unquote. The imam of idiocy, Rush Limbaugh, picked up the story and issued a fatwa against the summit on his August 17th show, claiming that the program was a plot to take over the last bastion of conservative goodness. You know, the corncob-smoking, cousin-poking, right-wing boondocks. I'm Una Nowling, and that was the transgender news for the week.
There are often many milestones along the journey of a transgender person, and one milestone on the path of most, but not all, is starting hormone therapy to begin a physical transition. However, due to the potential risks involved with hormone therapy, it's not something to be taken lightly. One needs competent and informed medical help to have the best chance of a safe and effective treatment. Our first guest with us today is one of the medical professionals who works in the area. We have in the studio Dr. Marsh, a reproductive specialist at the University of Kansas Hospital. She also provides hormone therapy to many of the Kansas City transgender community. Hello, Dr. Marsh, and welcome to Trans Talk.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Marsh, you practice in reproductive medicine in the University of Kansas Hospital. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be working there?
Yes, that is correct. I'm originally from Kansas, grew up in Wichita, and then did training in obstetrics and gynecology at Emory University, and went to University of Michigan for my reproductive endocrinology training. And that was where I learned how to do transgender care and worked with some experts in hormone therapy, and came back to Kansas to return to my family.
I understand you're treating quite a few of the city's transgender population with hormone therapy. How many patients do you currently treat?
Yes, it's been very exciting. When I came back from Michigan in 2013, I had probably 5 patients total, and then started partnering with the Transgender Institute, and now we see about 40 new patients a month.
40 new patients a month. How many existing patients do you have overall?
Oh, my. I don't have a number, but I would say in the hundreds now.
Wow.
We have people traveling from quite a distance, too, even areas you think would have transgender providers coming from Illinois and Chicago area, Indiana. It's really been amazing.
Has it been very, have you have a good relationship working with a counseling center like the Transgender Institute?
We do. We have a very close relationship. I've met with Emily and Caroline and some of the other providers there, and we have a good team.
Very good.
Speaking about teams, how is the support staff at the University of Kansas Hospital, the nurses and the receptionists?
Well, we have a very, very passionate nurse who provides the exclusive care of all our transgender patients, and I think she would riot if anyone else wanted to take over that spot. Her name is Judy Gay, and she does excellent job of taking care of patients. Our staff loves taking care of the transgender population. Everyone is very nice, and I feel like it's a very caring and supportive environment.
Yes, that definitely helps for people to feel comfortable. Do you mostly treat adults or children or both?
I primarily treat adults. We do work with Children's Mercy Hospital with Dr. Jill Jacobson, and so we've had patients who've transitioned from the child or the pediatric and adolescent into the adult care, and we'll see them as well.
Could you describe for us a typical outline of a first appointment with a transgender man or a woman when they first come to you?
We do require that they have a diagnosis of gender identity disorder or gender dysphoria made by Transgender Institute or by another qualified professional, usually in the psychologic field. And after that, we try to get hormones going as quickly as possible because we know they've been waiting a lifetime to start this mostly. We do get baseline labs to ensure that everything is safe, but we order the medicines as soon as we have the diagnosis.
Are there any conditions that might prevent someone from receiving hormone therapy completely?
I have had one instance where someone had had a prior stroke while on hormone therapy, and in that instance I did not provide hormones.
Is there anything that can be done when someone cannot start hormones, some treatment or retesting or anything like that?
You could do hormone blockers, depending on how your transition is going. So you could still be qualified to do, testosterone blockers. But some of the hormones do increase the clotting risk. So I just try to be careful that no one's going to have a health risk from undergoing the transition.
What sort of hormone blockers do you typically prescribe?
We typically prescribe spironolactone and sometimes finasteride. But we have had people on GnRH agonist to help block, and we also work with the surgical partners to help if you would like an orchiectomy or a gonadectomy.
That's something that comes up quite a lot, especially among transgender women who are uncertain if they ever are going to fully have gender confirmation surgery, the possibility of an orchiectomy. I was unaware that more than maybe one person actually performed that service in the area. Are you saying the University of Kansas can do that?
We do. We have at least, it's not a complicated surgery, actually, but we have at least two physicians. So far, it's been our reproductive urologist that's partnered and has been performing. I think there's been in the single digits so far, but probably close to five women.
Wow.
So what could someone expect over the course of treatment when they start on the hormones?
I first tell everyone it's like going through puberty, because I think everyone wants the changes to be super fast. We see people back in 3 months, though, and people have started to see a change almost universally, so positive changes. There are positive side effects, and there can be some negative side effects, too, so we try to keep in close contact with our patients to make sure they're doing okay.
It's often stated in the transgender community, there's a rumor that often goes around that modern day hormones are not as good as the good old days, such as Premarin, for instance. Many people will actually attest that they had significant breast growth on Premarin, and then when they were switched to just a 17 beta estradiol, that all of a sudden it stopped. Is there any backing behind that rumor?
I mean, that's a little funny to me, because a lot of those combinations are from urine. So the medicines we have right now are a lot cleaner medicines, and they're recombinant. So I always am a little bit humored by the fact that you'd want horse urine as the basis of your hormones. But those drugs still are available if someone feels strongly about it.
But would they have extra health risk, perhaps?
I don't think so. I think that the risk is the same, but the purified ones, the ones we use now, are supposed to be more effective.
Another common subject that's somewhat controversial in the transgender community is the effect of progesterone on physical transition. Online discussions can become very heated over whether or not progesterone has any effect. And, you know, one of the problems is everyone is pretty much dealing with a sample size of themselves. Not only is a sample size of one, but they're a completely subjective observer. Do you have any comments about progesterone use?
Yeah, it's a problem just in transgender medicine in general that we don't have enough evidence really in any field, the risk or the benefits or the side effects. That being said, I usually wait at least 2 or 3 years after being on estrogen before we discuss progesterone, and then I think it's a very individual decision, but I don't think that there's a lot of studies saying that there's a large benefit.
For transgender men, I guess, what is a typical course of treatment that you would undergo if when they come in your office? Or how would you handle a transgender man presenting differently than a transgender woman who came to your office?
You saying male to female? Or female to male?
Female to male. Yes.
Female to male. We typically do injectable medicines for our testosterone treatment. We've found that that works better than the gels or some of the other formulas. And we do either the intramuscular or the subcutaneous, and then we monitor their levels to make sure they're in the normal male range.
What would the difference be in possible risks or side effects for transgender men?
Some of them are similar. They're all the hormones are processed through the liver, so the risk of blood clot is common to all transgendered individuals seeking hormone therapy. But some of the side effects can be different for receiving testosterone, such as acne or oily skin or sometimes mood issues.
Is there such a thing as estrogen blockers that are given at the same time as testosterone?
I don't have any estrogen blockers, not like a pill, but obviously Lupron or some of the gonadotropin agonists or antagonists would block estrogen.
And that, I believe, is what's used a lot for the children.
That's correct.
Now, you said that you treat children as well as adults. Or no, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of someone else.
Dr. Jacobson does a wonderful job at that, but when they transition after her care, we take care of them.
And are there any differences from how you would treat the children, even the older children, to how the care is when they're adults?
She does such an excellent job of having them already transition to the adult care that they're mostly off of their blockers. So typically it's the same treatment that we would give to anyone.
What do you think is most important for a physician to have when they are trying to create an office environment that is friendly and welcoming to transgender patients, because so many of us, when we come into the doctor's office for the first time, it's not quite as scary as going into the psychologist's office for the first time, because that's absolutely terrifying. And I remember sitting in the car outside the Transgender Institute for nearly an hour before my first appointment, you know, getting up the courage to go in. And by the time I went in to see my doctor with my prescription for hormones, it was less scary, but at the same time, I was terrified of, you know, what they were going to say. Were they going to yoink my prescription away and say, no hormones for you, or something like that? What do you do to try to create a welcoming environment for people?
Yes, we have a very, even though we're part of KU, we have a very small office, so we get to know everyone, you know, by name. I think that's really key for transgender care. We're doing a lot of work at the University of Kansas. I've done lectures to the medical students, and we're also doing diversity training across the different departments to help with this. But I think the most important thing is just being open and friendly and compassionate and asking people how they'd like to be addressed, using pronouns that are appropriate to the patient. And everyone's in a different spot in transition, so we just try to be respectful.
Do your staff go through special training, or do you have a sort of, did you actually have to train your staff yourself, or do something to try to make them aware of some of the particular issues of transgender patients, especially because I know in some offices, perhaps not yours, the staff may rotate through, so you may have nurses that are rotating through in addition to your regular nurses?
Well, no, our nurse is our nurse. She's very, very set on being the only nurse, so we don't have that. We do have a small environment. There's probably 40 people that work in our office, and so we just had an office meeting and said, this is what we're doing, and does everyone feel comfortable? And we actually, this is universal for our clinic. We also see fertility patients, and we always ask, how would you like to be addressed, and what's your preferred name? And so I think it was pretty easy transition for us.
I think that's really important and really good practice. Now, you did mention about possible changes if someone had an orchiectomy. How would you be changing the hormone regimen after someone's had sexual reassignment surgery?
Yes, so it depends on what they've had done, but if they've had an orchiectomy or a gonadectomy, then typically we have to adjust the medicines down. I go a lot based off of how the patient feels. That's very important to me, where they're comfortable. Sometimes even if the hormone level is very low, if they're comfortable at that level, I don't want to push things. They can be whatever range they want to be, unless it's way too high. Then I have to take a little step back.
I know that some say that, you know, they want to take folks off of all testosterone blockers for transgender women after an orchiectomy or after SRS, but I understand your body can still produce some testosterone or an analog to testosterone?
Yeah, we have not done that. So our patients who have had orchiectomies, we still have them on blockers, and they've been still doing fine. But we monitor levels, we monitor their electrolytes and all that to make sure it's safe.
A frequent problem that friends of mine have reported with spironolactone is that they go to the bathroom an awful lot. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. Dosing is important for that. So we usually do twice a day dosing. And if you're taking one in the morning and one at night, a common complaint is getting no sleep because you're waking up to urinate all the time. So I typically say to take both in the morning. But that is a common problem. I say to drink a lot and be prepared to pee a lot.
There's a transgender guest in our studio who's nodding her head vigorously as you're saying this right now in the background.
Well, think of all the extra exercise you're getting up and going to the loo all the time.
Correct. It's a kidney
yes.
workout.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought that's what Pokemon Go was for.
Are you aware of any new developments in hormone therapy?
They have new preparations all the time, but I think that we're going to probably continue to stay with, in terms of this testosterone and estrogen primaries. But, you know, we're open to new preparations all the time. Cost is very important to me and to a lot of the patients, so if it's working well, that's most important.
Yeah, I was going to say that the new ones are probably going to be dearer, and some people have problems affording their hormones anyway.
Correct. It's expensive to get treatment and to be evaluated and to have all these visits. We've also tried to minimize the number of times that patients have to see us. Sometimes it's just labs only because we don't want people to go broke being who they need to be and who they want to be.
Are there any programs to help lower income or no income transgender women and men who come to see you?
We're really working on being able to get, we have JDoc, which is a free clinic, being able to provide care there. But we don't have any free services at our clinic right now.
Are you saying JDoc can do some transgender treatment, so to speak? Excuse me.
I'm not a part of that that exact clinic, so I'm not sure. I've heard rumors that there's a physician there that has been doing that treatment, but that's been on our bucket list to make sure that all transgender people are getting care and not just people who have money to can afford to see us.
Are you aware of the what many people call the informed consent policy of giving out hormones? I am asked this quite a bit by transgender women and men who say that in Missouri, some doctors can basically evaluate you without a psychologist's letter and give you a prescription for hormones immediately on the spot. And I personally know a couple of transgender persons who did that, saying that they, in effect, saying they did not have the money to be able to afford a psychologist.
That's hard. I mean, I haven't had the training to be able to make that diagnosis, so I don't feel comfortable doing that. I understand that there's financial concerns, but some of the effects we have with hormones are irreversible, so I would hate if someone wasn't truly diagnosed properly if we gave permanent side effects to these individuals.
Yes, and that's a concern, I think, for a lot of parents with children. They're worried that they may be still developing and not entirely sure of their own minds. So I think the puberty blockers are a really wonderful halfway house to prevent any damage being done.
Mm-hmm. That's really an amazing therapy. I'm glad more people are adopting it because it just buys you time.
It is difficult when you have a part of the community that is very much opposed to what they call gatekeepers, and actually not just psychologists fall into the category of gatekeepers, but you know, medical doctors such as yourself also fall into the category. I mean, with people saying you ought to be able to basically go to Walmart and buy your estradiol right next to your Flintstones vitamins or whatever. I worry about that because I have personally seen far too many people with serious health problems who should have been properly evaluated, who ended up having a friend of ours actually ended up having deep vein thrombosis and lost half of her lung function as a result of her estrogen use. And have you had any people in your treatment experience very serious side effects such as that?
We have not, but I'm sure we will. I mean, it's a known side effect, so by treating as many people as we are, it's going to happen eventually.
Do you recommend aspirin therapy for transgender patients on testosterone or estradiol?
If they have a cardiac issue, I try to work really closely with primary care to see if they need additional therapies. But there's no suggestions out there that a certain dose of testosterone warrants extra aspirin therapy. It's more just on your cholesterol profile and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And thinking of long-term issues, would you change the dosages and things as someone ages? What would you do if someone's starting to get into their geriatric care years?
Yes, we have worked on that, and it depends. I mean, the ovaries really lose a lot of function with aging. The testes, not as much, we've found. So we try to decrease the hormones as much as possible while keeping them happy and keeping the levels in the normal range.
Yes, because there might be issues with osteoporosis or other things if you've dropped things down too low.
Correct.
And do you have issues with people being able to get access when once they're living in more sheltered accommodation?
Access to what?
Access to healthcare, to your area of care, whether anyone's ever expressed any issues with homes being unwilling to bring you there.
Yes, we have had, I mean, I think the biggest thing is what we had talked about earlier is the finances that we do either bill through insurance or have people pay up front to see us. We try to have very reduced rates, but at the same time, we don't have free care, which is one of the things that we, you know, it's one of my goals for us to work on in the future. But we've taken big steps within the last few years I've been here, so I'm sure we'll continue to make some big bounds.
And I did hear about some updates with transplants, but I believe we're still a very long way from being able to have ovary or testes transplants.
Well, in our world, we just got uterine transplants going, and that's been a little mixed. It's worked well abroad and not so well here, but ovarian and testicles, I don't think that there's been tons of successful transplants. Penile transplants have happened, though, as well, and I'm wondering if that's going to transition into the transgender world.
We had one final question that came from the telephone. A good friend of ours, Sandra Mead, who is a former host of this program, asked, are there any specific treatments or ways to help transgender women who have suffered significant hair loss?
Oh, that's difficult. I struggle with that with a lot of patients in my clinic in general. We do suggest topical Rogaine is helpful. Spironolactone can also help. Finasteride can also help, but that's a constant battle that we're trying. There's not a really effective therapy.
There's no other better secret therapy restricted therapy.
That's how I need to make my millions.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, so Dr. Marsh, I want to thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for being here.
And now it's time for some music.
Every Woman, live at the Unicorn Theater, 3828 Main Street, Saturday, August 27th at 2:30 p.m. LGBTQ issues on equality and voting rights. Panelists are Una and Fiona Noling from The 10th Voice, with Karen and Adrian Richmond. Audience Q&A. The Women's Wall of Achievement will be on display. Every Woman, live at the Unicorn Theater, Saturday afternoon. Doors open at 2:30.
Welcome back. And the song you just heard was I'll Be Seeing You by Billie Holiday. And now, earlier this year, we started a series called Transgender Kaleidoscope, where we highlighted interesting individuals from the local Kansas City metropolitan community. Today, we have not just one individual, but an entire group to highlight. We have Libby, a transgender woman who has just finished high school, and her father Michael, mother Louise, and her fiancé Eliza, who also happens to be a transgender woman. Altogether, they represent a family of hope. Michael, Louise, Libby, and Eliza, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hey, you.
Hello.
Let's start with you, Dad. Michael, could you tell us a bit about yourself?
I'm an Australian, so anything I say is offensive to people. So I talk a lot, you know. So other than that, yeah, and Dad, come here nearly 20 years ago, been living in America now. So, and Libby's my daughter now. And we've been going through the process, and we're getting there.
Thank you. And now, Mom, Louise, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Louise. I'm the mother of four children. Libby is my youngest, and she's the last one left at home. Just recently graduated in May, and she plans on moving to Oregon to be with Eliza, who's visiting today from Oregon.
Libby, could you tell our audience a little bit about yourself if your mom didn't steal everything?
I think she might have, because that's just what she does. I'm 18, from Lee's Summit, I guess. I don't really know what to say. I'm here, that's it. I don't know.
And Eliza, can you talk?
So, I'm not exactly from Oregon. I've only been there since January. Technically, I was raised in Provo, Utah, which is an awful, horrible place. Do not go there. The second thing that I'm most excited about to be here for after Libby is the cicadas. I'm big on, like, insects and fungus and stuff. And I'd heard a lot about them and read a lot about them, and I know that they're ubiquitous in a lot of places, but I've never been anywhere with them during a cicada year. And so I know that that's mundane, but it's fun. They're good.
That's neat. I thought they were neat when I first moved over here, too, because we don't have them in England. So, Livy, how old were you when you first knew that you were transgender?
Oof. That's a toughie. What would you say? Probably around 12, 13-ish when I first found out, or first figured out, rather.
So once you figured it out, who did you tell first, or where did you go for information?
I first told my close friends at high school at the time. Unfortunately, we've since split ways, but I got most of my information from the internet, which I think is where a lot of trans people tend to get their information when they're first figuring themselves out.
Yes.
It was a bit more difficult when I went through my gender awareness because we didn't have this thing called the internet. We had the Olathe Public Library, which amazingly had almost no information whatsoever about the transgender experience.
And the slightly aggressive librarians from the stories you've told.
Yes, of course.
So after you got information from the internet and you told your friends, how did you feel approaching your parents to tell them?
I really wasn't comfortable at all, to be honest. I actually ended up telling them, well, I told my mom through text one night, and that didn't go over the best, didn't have the best results, don't recommend it. if I could have, I would have rather built up the courage to just tell them myself, in person.
But that's easy to say. We all know how scary and absolutely terrifying that is, especially in a very strongly gender binary society, mm-hmm. which demands that you are a boy, you will be a boy, and that is all there is to it, for instance. So right. It does take a huge leap of faith.
Of course.
So, Louise and Michael, what did you do when Livy told you she was transgender?
Well, honestly, we didn't really handle it very well. We were pretty ignorant. Libby was in Boy Scouts with Michael from the time she was 6 years old. And so, you know, she'd been saying she'd wanted out of Boy Scouts for a while. And the last thing for her to do would be the steps to get her Eagle. And so I thought that this was kind of a ploy to get out of Boy Scouts, which is, you know, looking back on it now, it's really stupid. But, you know, what girl wants to be in Boy Scouts? But, so it was hard at first. It was kind of shocking because, you know, you raise a child from the time they're born, and then they tell you that they're completely different than what you've known them to be their whole lives. So
you're underselling it. It was completely awful at the beginning.
It was completely awful. It was. We were in denial, both Michael and I, and it took us a good while to come around. We had a psychologist that Libby had been seeing since eighth grade for other reasons, and that person was kind of in agreement with us because they didn't know anything about what it means to be transgender and had never treated anyone that was transgender before. So, you know, in a way, you know, we had support in our ignorance, which didn't help Libby, and we ended up, you know, moving on from that psychologist to the Transgender Institute. And that's where, you know, we were, after a few sessions, we were given the diagnosis of gender dysphoria.
I saw Libby shaking her head when the psychologist was mentioned.
Oh, yes, he was completely awful. this particular individual actually would suggest putting off any form of transition because he wanted me to consider the social implications it would have upon my life, as if that wasn't already a thing I was considering on a daily basis.
Right.
And
right.
Feeling completely awful about. So he showed me several offensive videos that I could have gone without seeing, and
Wow, you mean like the things they show you in driver's ed, like the last prom and stuff?
Yeah, that kind of thing. I believe there were actually several SNL skits
really
regarding trans individuals. And yeah.
I want to meet this psychologist someday.
I'm sure you do.
I want to have a conversation with him.
I'm sure you do.
He actually has since apologized.
My
to
foot wants
us
to have
anyway.
A conversation with his backside.
Okay, moving swiftly on from the foot. So you transitioned during high school, and particularly with having had scary videos shown you by the psychologist, what? That must have been kind of scary. So what was the most scary or most challenging thing for you?
I didn't actually happen to really transition in high school until my senior year, in which it happened mostly during the latter half of the second half of the year. But I wish I had done it earlier, because the amount of... I didn't run into any problems at school. Well, one problem, but it was swiftly dealt with, and the individual who mocked me was seen as the one at fault by all people involved, which is completely not only hilarious, but reassuring.
When you say swiftly dealt with, do you mean by the school staff, or did you
correct.
Get a bunch... Okay, I didn't know if you had like a bunch of hard pipe-swinging gang members come after them or something.
It happened when we had a substitute, and when the teacher returned and found out, she was appalled and just wanted to do everything in her power to correct it.
While that was going on, Libby would send me messages sometimes about having gotten gendered correctly or having worn a particular piece of clothing to school, and nobody would say anything. And I really enjoyed seeing all of her anxiety kind of fade away over those couple of months.
I was going to say, where did you get the most support at school? It sounds like the teachers were very supportive, except for the substitute, or counselors, or friends.
I did. I had my counselor at school was fantastic. She was supportive in every way, and I couldn't have asked for a better one. Eliza, of course, was a huge support, and my friends, while I had them, were great too.
And we had absolutely no support at all.
Yeah, the parents were just awful. They didn't do a bloody thing for me.
Sarcasm doesn't translate over the radio.
No, you can hear it in some voice.
So you said your friends, well, you had them. So what happened there?
It's not particularly relevant. It was just a parting of ways, yeah.
What was the best thing or the most positive thing that happened during this process?
What do you mean?
Well, you said that some things were scary or bad. What was the... Was there any single incident or anything that stood out as the most positive thing?
Or I guess, was there a time when it suddenly dawned on you that you were going to make it?
I feel like once I got my name corrected in legal documents and also in the school documents because of that, I really felt like I was in the clear, to say.
She was really excited about that. She told everyone in all the chats and sent us photos of the documents, and we were all really happy for her.
It's a big step for a lot of transgender people. I remember when my wife got her F on her driver's license. She's never been so excited to get an F in anything in her whole life. Michael and Louise, as parents, what was the hardest thing watching Libby transition at school?
It wasn't so much the transitioning at school that was the most difficult. I think it was... There's actually a great sense of loss sometimes for the parents of transgender children. And for me, it was letting go of the feeling of losing a son and being able to welcome a daughter. That was, you know, that was kind of a very difficult thing. But she's absolutely beautiful. And we've had the amazing support of the Children's Mercy Hospital and their gender pathway services. And she sees, you know, an endocrinologist there, Dr. Jacobson, who's amazing. And she sees one of the psychologists through Children's Mercy as well. And they've just been really awesome. The thing about seeing her change is that a lot of the anxiety has fallen away. Also, I want to say that the administration at her high school was amazing. When she finally asked if she could be allowed to use the restrooms, that she was out enough to want to do that, and the changing rooms, they made accommodations for her. It was really amazing. We thought, because it's such a conservative area, that we'd have a fight on our hands, but no, Dr. Falconberry is amazing, and the administration really helped out with allowing her to be her true self.
That's got to be great for anyone in the Lee Summit area hearing that.
Yeah. I do remember her having to take it to Twitter against the superintendent for a couple of days. They seemed to back down after that, though.
That's true.
I know that there's someone on the Lee Summit Town Council that may be having some issues.
Don't get her started on that.
Okay.
Well, no, it's okay.
No, it's not.
There was a city council member who, when Target had announced that they were in support of all employees that are transgender as well as customers, and that they would be allowed to use the bathrooms that were, you know, of the gender they identified with, you know, there was a lot of uproar and there were a lot of protests. And one of our newly elected council members who hadn't even appeared at a city council meeting or sat through a city council meeting as a council member, had a news conference, and he wanted to say that he objected to Target's new policy, which isn't a new policy at all. And so anyway,
just the night I got here, she left to do battle with this council member.
Well, oh, no. That was I was meeting with someone about things.
So, moving swiftly on from politics, Michael, I know you were very involved with the Boy Scouts. Now, how have your relationship with Libby changed? Because you'll have lost that link, but surely you've gained other things.
She's still a geek, and I'm still a geek, so we still do geeky
You're
things
a nerd.
Together. Oh, I'm a nerd, sorry,
you
not
have
a geek.
A 3D printer at home that he built. Like, yeah. she told me about that one time, and I was just in disbelief, and then she sent me photos of all this crap that they 3D printed and of all the individual pieces that
And who did most of the building of the printer?
Well,
not me. It was...
No, I said it was
no,
you.
No,
it
was Libby.
Oh, she did?
She did most of the building.
She did?
I wasn't the one, so don't call me a nerd, you know. Yeah, it's Libby that does most of the building. No, I was going to say...
They built a 3D printer. What?
But the thing is, obviously we don't go on campouts, but we do the nerdy stuff still. And if I ever get into No Man's Sky, we might play that. And at the moment, we kind of do Pokemon Go. So other things have replaced the Boy Scouts. I kind of miss them because I don't have to look at my schedule half as much as I used to. But other than that, I was going to ask Libby, what would be your advice? Because as parents, when she first said it, our first reaction, it's a phase, like Teletubbies and Thomas the Tank and Legos, and she'll grow out of it. But, you know, she hasn't yet, so we're living with it. So I was going to ask Libby, what would be your advice to a teenager that's growing, thinking that they might be transgender? Should they talk to the parents? And what, if for the parents, the best thing is to listen to the child and see what, you know, actually listen and accept them, and then follow the right course. You know, do you go see a psychologist? Do you go to the Transgender Institute? What's the best course of action?
Let's let Libby answer.
So your question is, what advice do I have for
other teenagers?
I'd recommend listening to yourself, because when you're going through the whole figuring out process, there's a lot of self-doubt, and you're not really sure about anything. You think maybe there's something wrong with you. You think you're not the way you're meant to be, but that's not at all true. You're perfect the way you are, and once you come to terms with that, and you come to terms with how difficult it can be to take this path to be yourself, you kind of get an attitude of not caring after a certain amount of time, because you're done with not being who you want to be, and you just want to get there. But you definitely have to be honest with how hard it is and the feelings you're experiencing, because if you're not, then everything can get pushed down, and that can just be a nightmare, and I don't recommend that for anybody.
Would you agree with that, Eliza, or have something else to add?
Yeah, and I'd say that the biggest thing is that kids need to know that they're allowed to be trans. Like, it's not... For the longest time, I wanted to just not tell anyone for 6 months to prove that it was a real thing. And I managed to do it for 1 month, and I just couldn't go any longer. And, like, even beyond that, like... I don't know. I feel like the advice should focus mostly on that it exists at all. Like, I didn't know for... I don't even... It's a whole thing.
Well, Michael, Louise, Libby, Eliza, thank you very much for being on Trans Talk today.
Thank you for having us.
It's wonderful having you here.
And it's wonderful seeing Libby and Eliza sitting on each other's laps and looking so happy together. But now I'm afraid I have to move on to the community calendar. And there's a lot of events to talk about this week. On Thursday, September the 1st, the Transfinity KC Chorus will be meeting for rehearsal at 7 p.m. at Country Club Congregational United Church of Christ. They are starting rehearsals for the fall season, and new people are welcome to come at 7 p.m. for placement auditions to see what section you should sing with. That's at 205 West 65th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, and everyone is welcome. Also on the 1st of September, there is a skincare and makeup Q&A from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Transgender Institute, 8080 Ward Parkway, Suite 400, Kansas City, Missouri. If you're interested, see www.transinstitute.org for more details. Passengers LGBTQ Youth Center meets at Trinity United Methodist Church every Wednesday from 5:30 to 9 p.m. for ages 14 to 20. Passages is a long-running Kansas City Youth Center dedicated to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth and straight allies, and they meet at 620 East Armour Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. As schools and colleges have gone back for the fall, UMKC Trans Plus Allies is starting its fall program. The group is an inclusive monthly social support group and facility discussion on gender, identity, and expression, meeting on the first Wednesday of the month. That's September the 7th in the Student Union, room 402, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. UMKC LGBTQIA have also announced their 2016 Pride Lecture. Thursday, November the 3rd at 6 p.m. in the Pearson Auditorium, and Janiyah Khan, International Ambassador for Black Lives Matter, will be speaking. For more information, go to UMKC LGBTQIA on Facebook. A transgender support group organized by Dr. Hish and Sony will run the first and third Saturday of the month from 1 to 2:30 p.m. The group is open to all transgender persons, allies, and family members. 901 Kentucky Avenue, Suite 303, Lawrence, Kansas. And there's three items for Light Me Lighthouse this month, which is just a couple of doors down from our studio at 3909 Main Street, Kansas City, Missouri. They are having their first annual barbecue cook-off fundraiser on September 25th from noon till 3 p.m. For more information, visit their Facebook page or www.likemelighthouse.org. Next, Hear Me Out Toastmasters will be meeting at 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. They're an LGBT enthused group which meets to practice public speaking and leadership skills. And finally, every third Thursday at the Lighthouse, the Equal Trans Support Group meets at 5 p.m., so the September meeting will be on the 15th. As an added note, they'll be working as grounds crew at the Kansas City Renaissance Festival on October 1st and 10th, and this is a fundraising opportunity for their organization, so if you wish to help, contact them on etsg2011@gmail.com for more information. And every month, I lead the Kansas City Sofa Group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender persons. We will meet on the first and third Wednesday of the month at Leawood Pioneer Library, and on September 7th at 6:30 instead of room 115, and on the 21st at 6:30 in room 116. For driving directions and other sofa information, you can visit transitcity.org/sofa. And if this all went by too fast for you to write down, you can find it on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/10thvoice. I'm Fiona Nowling, and that's a community calendar for the upcoming month. I'd just like to thank you for tuning in to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. Many thanks to our special guests, Dr. Marsh, Michael, Louise, Libby, and Eliza, our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson, and last but not least, my co-host, Una Nowling. Remember that you can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the10thvoice@gmail.com. And next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart, Amy Bell, and Ebony Johnson. As a special note, Every Woman will be broadcast live today from the Unicorn Theatre, barely half a block away at 3828 Main Street. The doors open at 2:30 for this free event, and both myself and Una will be helping lead a discussion and taking questions from the audience on LGBTQ equality and voting rights. And be sure to join the 10th Voice next week as well, Saturday at 1 p.m. for more discussion of LGBT topics and events which shape our lives and our world. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.